So this is a book, capital T Prime, starts March 10th, 2006, and runs through March of 2007. Beginning as usual by continuing what was going on with the design of a construct that would give condition and deletion of the bradykinin receptors. In other words, we could control when the bradykinin receptors were used or not used. It turned out to be very useful idea, and here is the detailed of the construct, the usual sort of diagram on page one, Friday, March 10th, and as follows. Then preparing the to isolate the various fragments needed in various bacteriophages. For example, trying to get on Monday, March 20th, page 7, trying to get a bovine growth hormone poly A fragment that will be used to make a message very stable, following Massau's method. So it continues for many pages on straightforward work to isolate the fragments and join them together. Typically Tuesday, March 28th, page 15, a check on the on these fragments and on gels. And on the following page, a review of the state of the bacteriophage minis used to isolate pieces of DNA. And nothing particularly remarkable in the pages there. Typical though, as usual. Thursday, April 6th, page 27, review of the growth from previous transfer and abandon this approach. There's bovine growth hormone poly A again being talked about on Friday, April 7th, page 29. Thinking of a different vector, following page. As always, renewed efforts. Monday, April 10th, page 33, renewed effort at getting this particular piece that was being considered there. Having to try different things when stuff didn't work. Friday, April 28th, page 45, LOX B by PCR. View of no colonies with LOX B oligo, maybe a better redesign for PCR amplification. So trying to shift the method of making a multiple sequence. And as we see again on Monday, May 8th, page 49, continuation of LOX-B and linker. LOX-B being needed in order to make sure that one could control the structure of the gene by using Cre recombinase. And a sad comment on Sunday, May 21st, back from London with Nobuyu to see Roger with lung cancer. Unfortunately, he'd been diagnosed and later died of lung cancer, though he never smoked, but he lived in London in the time when smog was very prevalent, and I'm sure that must have had something to do with it, very likely. Not sure, but very likely. But he was getting pretty sick at that time. This is in 2006, so he was 81 at the time. Well, 80, bordering on 81. Beginning to think about direct tests of proteins in mice, Cy5 labelled mouse albumin. That's mouse albumin which had been made fluorescence with a fluorescent side chain Cy5, and here is work of, now in collaboration with Baron Ballou. Baron Ballou made three levels of label of mouse albumin with Cy5, estimated as from about 1 to 2 Cy5 molecules per molecule of albumin. And this is some attempt to see through the mouse by long wavelength excitation that could cause Cy5 to emit enough to visualize in a living animal. This is his one of his images. It says he concentrated the lowest labeled albumin and injected it intravenously. And images of the nude mouse showed intravascular fluorescence with the 670 nanometer emission of Cy5, etc. So, beginning to do direct experiments with mice and fluorescent protein with regard to testing my ideas on how the kidney separates small and large molecules. Also thinking about the lymphatic drainage of the kidney, which was a very interesting theoretical possibility. And probably relevant. And so Thursday, May 25th, page 57, received from Baron Ballou Cy5 albumin and transferred it to Nobuyuki Takahashi, who was a postdoc at the time. So we're beginning to see a transfer, and a change in the focus of my work towards working more and more with kidney problems. There was a good, or supposedly a good method of measuring fluorescence with small samples, a machine called the Fluorostar, and I tested it and found it very unsatisfactory. although at first I thought I was getting a good linear curve. But as we'll see, that could be improved on very greatly. Some general talk about kidney function and clearance of albumin from kidney. Glomerular filtrates on Wednesday, June 7th through 9th, page 61, on albumin protein overload and transepithelial. That sentence doesn't end, but it was transepithelial passage or uptake, talking about the fetal receptor for the constant region, FCRN, of immunoglobulins, that is, it's sensitive to amino acid differences, etc. So various comments there about what it might be done, nothing terribly striking. Not to have stopped doing DNA work, Wednesday, June 14th, page 65, comparisons of two candidates. Back to thinking about the what would happen with the, what is happening with clearance of albumin using an animal that is lacking the fetal receptor for the constant region of the heavy chain of immunoglobulin, which also affects albuminuria. So tests of clearance of Cy5 albumin in wild type versus FCRN minus minus mice, which we had obtained. With the fluorostar. Which I didn't like very much. So on page 71 it says, a conclusion, whole blood cannot be used. And some attempts to get calibration curves. And then quite a novel idea that turned out to be very useful, although I don't think I ever published it. Tuesday, June 27th, the lower part of the page 71, a new thought. I can use the microscope autofill feature to get time required to peak the image. And use 1/1 as a measure of fluorescence. And so check this with a rough dilution series. In other words, the automatic camera of the microscope counts different pixels and when an appreciable fraction have been saturated, in other words 256 bits, or 256 level, then the camera automatically stops so that it doesn't get washed out with overexposure. But that time obviously depends on how the fluorescence, and so this was a beginning test of that. And on page 70 it's pretty clear that there was a pretty good relationship there. It looked like a very nice standard curve. And this was pursued on the following pages 72 and 73, and became quite clear that we had a good new method of measuring fluorescence with equipment that we had available. So it goes on making a little apparatus to hold the a little rack to hold the tubes. Page 75, Wednesday, June 28th, more Cy5 tests. tested with flat capillaries, and there's a little image of the type of flat capillary which makes it more accurate. And for example, showing that this bite here uses an image which uses the flat part of this type of capillary. It was 1.5 times more sensitive than the using a round capillary. I enjoyed doing that work, and some more dilute tests on Thursday, June 29th, page 77, spent most effort on testing 1/1000th dilution versus plasma, etc. And would it work? And it was looking very good. And so it proceeded with the first tests with the new method using immunoglobulin. So I got Cy5 IgG from Byron, and then looked at its half-life in animals with or without the mutation that knocks out that Fc receptor. And one was had a half-life of 140 hours, and the other had a half-life of 18 hours. Quite nice results. Gave good data for the first try. And with a comment that the half T half is longer than published, but not much. Proceed, but include quantum dots calibration standard. And then, sadly, on Monday, July 3rd, page 81, I record that my brother, Roger, died. And there are some photographs taken of him on our last visit, when he was still cheerful, although very obviously having difficulty, and with his favourite poem about climbing. Man is the freedom of the tranquil hills. And a good picture of him. And then commenting below that sad comment of a visit to Indianapolis with John Hagerman and Bob Bagnell and Nobuyuki to learn about two photon fluorescence of the renal glomerulus with Bruce Molitoris's lab to see what would happen to clearance when the aorta was blocked. And the following couple of pages, page 83 and 82, are a summary of the results obtained with Bruce, which were informative, and though again not at this point ever published. Back to the old problems of making good plasma from whole blood on Monday, July 24th, page 89, whole blood to plasma, and how to do it with a microcapillary. More analysis of the data from the testing the new idea of obtaining fluorescent measurements, and they are looking on page 90. The lower right, the bottom image on the right, shows how beautiful the linearity of the procedure was, and covering a range of concentration 1 to something diluted 2048 times. So it's a linear, a spectacular result, even with this series. So that method we use quite a bit, and in various images of it on the following page 92. I thought of maybe even having that a simple apparatus of this sort made commercially and patented, but never did follow it up. And here we are with the results visually now of Friday, Saturday, August 1st, 2nd, page 95 of the Indianapolis experiments, continued from page 82. Some more comments. Yeah, some things from Yuma, from Kumar on Friday, August 11th, page 97 and 96, towards what later was published, as we've seen. Getting images now with sci-fi wildgoin into the mouse, and where one can see all the glomeruli being heavily or being very brightly fluorescent, and then at a high magnification one can also see the fluorescence. These were vibratome sections examined by confocal microscopy after fixing the kidney and paraformaldehyde. And with a comment that the images are nevertheless of high quality. More analysis of the Indianapolis data on Wednesday, August 23rd, page 101. Here we are on page 105, Tuesday, September 5th, Maria Diderova's first tests with the mutant FcRn mutant versus wild type with albumin. Couldn't see any differences. But some comment that that conclusion might be incorrect. The intensities are tricky, and need to look at a better look at 5 minutes. Some data now by a scanning electron microscopy, high resolution images, page 107, Tuesday, September 5th. 2 mice from Fong were examined, indistinguishable at this point. I presume that one was a mutant and one was not, but not clearly stated. The comment is that subsequently, after the saying that they are indistinguishable, subsequently Fong indicated that these 2 mice were both untreated. So these are wild-type mice, and that's why they were undistinguishable and had normal fenestration in the endothelium. Very nice, and very nice images. More of these images on the following pages, and more of the fluorescent images on page 110 and 111, and some rather spectacular fluorescent images, and one on page 111, which I used to use often to show what was happening, with later difficulties in understanding why the basement membrane always was fluorescent, but the plasma didn't appear to be present in most of the glomerular capillaries, which we later understood was a problem during fixation, that almost certainly when the glomerulus was being, when the kidney was being fixed, the glomerular afferent and efferent arterioles could still contract, and did so, but not fully close, so that as further contraction occurred, plasma was ejected from the glomerular capillary, but red cells remained there, so that the space was occupied by red cells rather than by plasma. So one would only see fluorescent in the basement membrane. But these are some of the experiments that led to that conclusion. With a grant writing hiatus on Monday, September 25th through October 31st, page 115. More fluorescence experiments going on here on the picking up work. Wednesday, November 8th, page 117, a 15-minute IgG experiment showing that even IgG can get through to the tubule if you wait. Some of this work, I'm even at the present time here in 2015 writing up some of the of this work, which didn't get published when Mike was still a postdoc, Mike Altenberg, that is, who worked with Maria. We've got some images from Beta Akita bradykinin null mice. The glomeruli looked normal. And except for some blown up glomeruli. over the next several considerable number of pages trying to understand these fluorescent images. A pulse chase experiment from 10:26 to 0:06 was being looked at on November 15th, Wednesday, November 15th, page 125, where Mike gave a quick injection, less than 1 second, and also a slow injection over 2 minutes, and sacrificed that 15 minutes, etc. Thinking about the distribution of the label in the animal with an alpha phase and a beta phase, etc. Jen Wilder, Mike Altenberg's wife, and still a very happy worker in the lab, one of the best technicians I've ever had. She's on page 129, Friday, November 17th. She set up a dilution series, a standard for the concentrations, so a standard curve with this time method. A mixture of Psi-5 labeled IgG and Psi-3 labeled IgG that had been digested with trypsin was tried on Monday, December 4th, page 131. And similar things. I was obviously thinking about getting a grant for doing this work, and Wednesday, December 13th, page 135, shows some ideas that had been discussed in writing my hypothesis paper. And this is the beginning of what turned out to be a marathon study that is still ongoing. In preparing for a kidney hypothesis grant application, I realized that by using a size-graded series of gold beads, I may be able to establish the validity of Oxton's equation in the glomerular basement membrane by directly counting particles, as illustrated in my 2003 paper diagram, and as used by Jarrod in 2006, and following Marilyn Farquhar's 1960 ferritin method. Develop this now, underline. So that's the beginning of what is still very much part of my work, and in fact I'm writing up a paper on this at the present time, so that's 9 years later, with some images from Jarrod's paper being shown there. Though I now realize that those are a little spurious, because Jarrod was taking his points with ferritin after an hour or so, instead of after seconds. Some thoughts on that I'm sure are not novel to me, A second less developed thought is that the countercurrent sodium chloride gradient developed by iron pumping in the tall ascending limb may be transferred to the loop of Henle as a continuing multiplate system. If the sodium chloride gradient generated more energy than the urea water gradient requires, then energy would not then be needed in the thin loop, but it would still be effective. Develop this later. Trying to calculate how much label I would need in order to be able to see anything on page 137, Friday, December 15th. Assuming an unlabeled 26 angstrom diameter 1.4 nanometer nanogold, which could be bought, supplied at 30 nanomolar, then one can count. One can calculate how many particles there are and the volume of the basement membrane in a 70 nanometer thick electron microscope section and whether there would be enough to see. Ferritin used on page 136, ferritin as used by Jared at 15 mg per 30 gram mouse would be 20 micromolar in milliliters of plasmid and would have 1.2 times 10 to the something's there and but difficult to read particles per 1.5 microliter. It looks like 1.2 times 10 to the 13th particles per microliter, 15 grams of ferritin is 31.6 nanomoles. You compare to 30 nanomoles of particles, etc. So beginning to, anyway, the main thing is beginning to think about how many particles one needs in order to see them. Here on Friday, December 22nd, page 139, some data on aspirin and allopril, because of having read publications which suggested that you can get albuminuria by having an animal treated with aspirin after ACE inhibition. Beginning to think about using aspirin to lower the GFR. This was the aspirin and allopril data were from earlier work. This work stemmed from worker in Guyton's lab a long time ago, in which he tried to see how GFR could be decreased, and he published some work suggesting that a combination of aspirin and enalapril could get GFR down very substantially. So, beginning to think about that. And on this page, with the mean arterial pressure falling very substantially over 4 hours on page 139, and with proteinuria, this eventually turned out to be an effect not of aspirin, but of the breakdown product of aspirin, salicylic acid, as was studied very extensively by Ryan Sanford, which no doubt we'll come to as we go through the history. Beginning to try some of these things anyway. Tuesday, March 6th, page 141. Grant's finished with the hypertension, had a good score in the top 2.3 percentile. They're looking at some of Nobuyuki's data on urinary albumin versus GFR. But here it looks as if as GFR increases, albuminuria increases the opposite way from what I was expecting. So the comment here is that there's no doubt that urine albumin excretion per day or per minute decreases as GFR decreases in the left experimental or right experimental kidney, etc. The result is not encouraging, but not clearly disproving. It fits Lazara and Dean's prediction. They predicted exactly this effect, that as you increase GFR, you would increase albuminuria. Now, I think that probably there is a biphasic curve, that's to say very low the GFRs will increase albuminuria, and very high GFR will also increase it. Increase albuminuria for two different reasons. The first being the effect on albumin concentration as GFR decreases and saturation of the tubule, and the second being too rapid passage through the tubule for the albumin to be recovered. So I think probably Dean and Lazara are right, as well as possibly I'm right. Now looking at the endothelium using the scanning electron microscope 4 or 5 days after giving the S-flit virus, S-flit-1 virus, received from Ananska Kuramanchi. So Fung's experiment showing that actually after the virus there is definitely a decrease in the area of the that can be seen to have good fenestra versus the control. But that's rather a limited number of tests. But no question that the S-flit virus causes albuminuria. With a comment that the proteinuria is clearly induced, P less than 0.01, and increases as GFR decreases. But the control animals with the similar distribution of GFR show no proteinuria. So the experiment is therefore not free from ambiguities. review of the rationale of the aspirin enalapril experiments on page 147, Tuesday, March 6th. And in checking on the gait and auto-regulation of blood pressure versus salt balance, I came across a auto-regulation of a GFR, which interferes with my attempts to decrease GFR by decreasing blood pressure, etc., etc. So, finding things a little bit complicated as usual. The business of using the energy of sodium chloride to transfer other solutes is a matter of switching channels and using the energy available from sodium chloride to move other ions and non-ionic substances. I'm pretty sure this is a general idea, not mine only. Starting to be worrying about what the limit of our current the current experiments were on following nanoparticle distribution was reviewed on Wednesday, March 7th, page 149. Various comments about it and images, none of which are particularly striking, on page 148. A need for something better. Back to making a fusion gene, GFP fusion gene, connected to albumin. With a comment at page 153, Thursday, March 15th, couldn't bear it. We'll modify the endogenous mouse albumin gene to give a GFP fusion protein with GFP on the C terminus so that the signal peptide, etc., etc. And so began to think about making transgene that were driven by albumin or attached to albumin. In other words, labeling the albumin with GFP genetically rather than chemically. And with a scheme for making what I called albumin GFP, then on page 155 and 154. And that was indeed made and tested, as we'll see. With the usual then constructs being made, page 159, Wednesday, March 28th, PCR for the 3' short albumin piece. And the book ends on page 163, Friday, March 30th, talking about the short arm PCR fragment that was needed to continue that construct. And so ends book T prime.